Welcome to the In the Bag podcast. Jonathan Slaughter from scorching Houston, Texas, and with me as always is Jazzy James Hoffman. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right. You're definitely not doing as well as I am. You got to move. You can't stay in Houston if it's going to be like that every day. And it was, you sent that picture you sent me, it was like 11 p.m. and it was still 90 degrees and like 70% humidity. You got to get out of there. Save yourself.
You know, I didn't even check what the humidity was today, but it was 100 degrees with 113 heat index.
I don't believe in that.
And it was only 43% humidity, which is quite low. But I saw this.
You just said 43% humidity was low. Take that in. Just like breathe that in for a second.
And I saw this picture on Twitter that shows the heat wave in California. You know, there's like Palm Springs or whatever where it's like 1,000 degrees. But yeah, I saw even in LA it was like 92, and then in San Francisco it was 70 still.
We keep it comfortable. We don't like too much of that heat. That's not our favorite thing. Keep it comfortable. Inland, yeah, it gets super warm. Like where I would be going to work every day is like, you know, 95, 96, up to 102, 103. But it's still a dry heat there. But you're outside in the chemical plant where it's hot anyways. But yeah, inland it gets hot here on the bay. It's not too bad. We're like, where we live is probably only a mile to the water, so it stays pretty cool. It's nice.
And you get to play some golf this upcoming weekend, which is doubly nice.
Oh, yes. Hopefully I'm playing this weekend. I don't know if I am or not. We'll just say I am.
You know, and unfortunately, I missed the almost all of the final round except for the last, literally, the playoff holes.
You came back at the worst time.
Yeah, well, I came back at the best and the worst time because I saw Justin Thomas make a 50-foot putt, only to be followed up by Morikawa making that 24-foot putt and then winning on the third hole of overtime. I mean, can't ask for a better performance than that. In terms of drama, obviously, I have choice words for Justin Thomas, who I've always questioned his mental fortitude, but this does not make me feel any better about that.
And you know, I feel like the one thing we got robbed of, and it was the fact that, you know, Justin Thomas, guy that has the most wins over the last 4 years, is in a group with the two premier young studs right now, and they kind of go shot for shot with him for however many holes, and he rebounds after bogeying two out of the first four or whatever, and Hovland and Morikawa just kind of stare him down. And then Hovland he putted really poorly last week, which is kind of a theme with him. But eventually his putter let him down. He hit one in the water and like somewhere between like 9 and 12, and made a bogey. First guy to kind of blink, and then JT goes 7 under through 8 holes and opens up a 3-shot lead with 3 to play, and then bogeys 2, and Morikawa is able to chase him down. Wins in the playoff because he makes a 24-foot putt after JT's 50-foot was just like incredible. But the one thing I do think we got robbed of was, I think it was 1 or 2 more playoff holes, they would have gone to the short par 4, 14. It's in the in the rules. And when they came to that hole during, you know, the round, Morikawa hit driver after when JT laid up with like a 7-iron, 200, you know, hit laid up to 100 yards. And I wanted to watch that. I really wanted to see what they were going to do.
Yeah, that short par 3 is so much better than the Travelers par 3.
Yeah.
Which is just a load of crap.
Right.
And so, yeah, that definitely, I didn't realize that was it like the next one or one of the next ones?
It was either the next one or the hole after. They played 3, right? And I think it's the fourth hole they would have played. They would have gone to 14 and played it.
That would have been awesome.
And I don't know if it actually says anything, but I thought it was like such an interesting contrast that, you know, they go to that hole and Hovland and Morikawa are both only 1 or 2 strokes back of Thomas at the time. And they both don't even think about it. They just grab driver out of the bag, and they just step up and whack it. And it was, like, an interesting contrast. Because, like, you know, Thomas is only 27 or whatever, so he's still a young guy. But he's, like, thinking his way through the course. He's like, oh, I don't want to make the big mistake. And Hovland did make the big mistake, which put him out of the tournament, you know, from that standpoint. If he had chipped in, maybe he had a chance. But then Morikawa just laces one to 10 feet. And, you know, it was awesome. That was great theater and a lot of fun to watch those guys kind of battle it back and forth.
You know who would have been more fun to get on that on a 14 playoff would be Bryson. I mean, like a 2-iron. You could just lightly
that's,
on the green there.
That's a 4-iron. He just flight in a 4-iron. And
he gets a nice loft, a soft landing.
He could probably spin it back. 310 yards. He could probably put some spin on it. But yeah, we get a loaded field for the Memorial this week. It's gonna be a lot of fun. We get Bryson back, Rory's back, Tiger's making his first appearance since quarantine. You know, all the guys that were there last week, all the big names playing last week. So it should be a lot of fun. I'm really excited for this tournament. See how Morikawa's going to play, Hovland's going to play in a bigger tournament, because those guys have been, they were just on a roll, except for one off day for Morikawa in round three. They both played phenomenally all weekend. So it should be a lot of talent, a lot of guys, playing well. Hopefully.
Absolutely. So notable names that will be there next week, or this upcoming weekend, or where they finished last weekend, if they were near the top. Morikawa, JT, Hovland, B3 there. Woodland, a top five. Poulter, top five. Cantlay, Horschel, Day. Is Hoffman there?
No, he's not a notable name.
Yeah. Our T7, along with Kevin Stroman, who will be back again. T14. And then Reavy, Gooch, Sink, Sabatini, all T17. They'll all be back here this upcoming weekend. So a lot of guys who did well that will be back. It should be fun. I don't know what else to say other than, it seems like outside of the last tournament that when Bryson won, it was a little bit of drama. Dustin Johnson's win was probably the least drama.
Yeah, for sure.
All the tournaments have been really good since we've been back. So we've got two playoffs since we've been back. Morikawa's been in both of them.
It feels like who was it? There was somebody specific. I guess we just had a lot of playoffs early too. I wonder if I should go back and I wonder if I can find the odds for all the tournaments so far and see if you would be plus money if you put like $100 on the every tournament to go into a playoff at this point, because I feel like we've had a lot of them this season.
Definitely, yeah. Munoz won on a playoff. I feel like if you
Webb beat Finau in a playoff in Arizona.
Yeah, and Scottsdale, yeah. Yeah, so, four seems like you'd be making back your money for sure. Two in the last 5 weeks, that's pretty good.
Rory beat Xander in a playoff. There have been a lot of them.
Was that was last year, though, no?
No, Rory and Xander was this year.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah, so, we did this last week, but if you didn't listen last week, we got to do the course analysis. So we're back at Muirfield again. This is the traditional Memorial setup, as opposed to last weekend where they tried to move some things around to give the guys a different look from what they'll be seeing this weekend. What's going on with the course?
The course is only going to play a little bit shorter this week. They added about 80 yards to it last week, but more than taking actions, the PGA Tour is really taking inactions to change what we're going to be viewing this week as opposed to last week. The two inactions they're basically going to take is, based on my understanding, is they won't be watering the course at all. Even if they do, it's only going to be a little bit. So fairways are going to be a lot faster. You're going to have more balls roll into the rough. Your green speeds are going to get a lot faster. They're going to go from about an 11 to a 13 on the stint meter, which is, Memorial.
11's pretty fast. 11's pretty fast already, so 13's pretty
fast. So the Memorial Tournament in Muirfield is known for having pretty fast greens. The rain with the fact that they watered them a little extra to slow them down last week had a big impact. Now this makes putting tougher for the guys on tour, but it'll make more interesting approach shots for them because they'll be able to spin the ball and move it on the greens more, use the contour more. There are quite a few shots where they're playing into slopes, expecting the ball to roll back down the hole or whatever, and then it's just so wet that the ball bounces soft and sticks. So it should create more fun and put even more pressure on guys' approach games this week. Then the other inaction is they're not cutting any of the rough. So it was already pretty thick last week. We saw, I think 18 probably showed it to me more than any other hole. If you missed the fairway, to the right or to the left, you really didn't have a chance at hitting that green. And if you did, you weren't going to have a good putt the majority of the time. So rough's only going to get thicker, longer. And nobody's allowed on the course today to kind of let it recover. They did the same thing last Monday. So I think the course should be in good shape. I think it'll be fun to watch it play a little bit faster, a little bit tougher. And we didn't see anything crazy as far as scores last week. Because I think the first couple days were relatively tough, for the guys. We thought after day one that the cut was going to end up being around even. But then there were, you know, a little bit of rain on the delays, and we got some better scores. But I would expect a cut line around even, minus one this week. Maybe a little bit lower, but a similar winning score.
Yeah. Really
go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, I thought it was interesting that, if I'm reading this right, like 17 guys finished at the cut line or lower, even after playing, which is pretty unusual. You, of course, have a couple guys that just blow up over the weekend, but have so many guys that really just struggled after the weekend or after the break. It was pretty interesting. I think that is something that you'll see, that it's just going to continue being like that.
Because, I feel like the high scores were really high this week, right? Like, I mean, I know Ryan Palmer made a 9, but even the second day, he didn't play well, right? Like, the guys that struggled, whether it was, you know, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, Sunday, really, really struggled with the course.
Yeah, I mean, I think Chase Koepka shot great.
Yeah, it was bad.
He ended up 81, yeah.
Yeah, it was...
It was tough out there for sure. And one thing that I think will also be kind of interesting for the cut line and stuff, I thought last weekend the only reason that it went really, the scores were so low being like negative 10 or whatever at the cut, was that Morikawa is just so hot that I feel like whenever it's like in a shootout, in a basketball shootout, like even if you're playing good defense, like everyone just kind of focuses in and they just start making shots and you just keep making shots and it carries over.
And right, sure, yeah.
That happened this past weekend because it was crazy that the cut, for like the longest time, Morikawa was like minus 9 and the cut was minus 2. And so you just had a ton of guys in between, in, you know, 7-stroke difference. And that's pretty unusual, I guess.
Yeah, we haven't seen that much this year. I feel like the guy that's kind of got off to the 36-hole lead or whatever is led by 2 or 3 strokes, and the grouping behind him hasn't been as bunched up. But this time, you know, yeah, exactly what you said, it was different. We had a lot of people in tight territory, and I think 68 finished on the cut, and was it 67? If two of those guys had moved back to even for minus one, or move back to minus one from minus two, we would have had like 82 guys make the cut because there were so many people at minus one. And I know specifically for me, that ended up hurting me a lot in DK. I had, you know, Max Holman not make a lot of cuts that would have changed some lineups for me. I had, you know, Brooks Koepka made a 23-footer that put him, you know, at minus one, which could have helped him make the cut. That was 4 lineups for me. So I had a little bit of heartbreak this week, some guys that could have made the cut, but, you know, that is what it is. It's the name of the game. You gotta put the guys in the right number, and wasn't able to do it this week. But it was tight and fun to root for down the stretch, at least.
Absolutely. Okay, let's just jump into DK. I mean, I think it's we'll kind of go through some of the numbers here for everyone. Let's stick with the top guys because I kind of like always keeping the top group only to 6 or 7 guys because they're the best guys in the world, and I think they deserve the most conversation. So we have 6 guys at 10,000 or higher. That's Morikawa, DJ, Rory, JT, and DeChambeau. Who's your favorite guy, and then who is the guy that you think personally? So I think we're both in agreement that Dustin Johnson's going to be the lowest out of everyone in this group, right?
Yeah, I think the recency bias on Colin Morikawa will kind of catch up with people, and his price didn't jump insanely high, right? He's only 10,000, so I think he'll be relatively highly owned. I think Dustin Johnson's win, like you said, was the least exciting. It was kind of boring. The Travelers, I mean, he's just, despite the fact that he's got I think he's got the most wins since like 2008 or whatever on tour, since it's not as sexy a name right now as Rory. He's the face of the game. You know, Bryson DeChambeau is the most fun to talk about. And then I think like a lot of people would probably consider Justin Thomas the most complete player in the world. So I see Dustin Johnson being the lowest owned. I honestly think Morikawa might be the second lowest owned, or Bryson.
I think Bryson's kind of interesting. Because I think you can go, obviously there's 2 ways to go every tournament, but I feel like specifically in this tournament, with the way it is, you can have both a top-heavy lineup because there are guys that I think that are very valuable down at the bottom. But I also think that the meat of this DraftKings, these guys that are right in the middle are just so enticing that I really had trouble figuring out a lot what to do between basically from Cantlay all the way down to Day. There's a lot of guys down in that range that are just either playing well or have good course history or, you know, have the right stats to do well at this tournament. So I feel like you can if you go with the Shambo, you could go all the way down to like Finau, and that way you're not having to pick like a $6,200 guy.
Right.
And you can build your lineup that way, or you can grab two, you know, these top end guys. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of ways to go in this, and because of that, someone who kind of likes being the contrarian, I'm not really sure how I want to play it. So I'm just sticking to my numbers this week and not really caring about ownership, because I don't really think it's going to be wild for any particular person.
So yeah, that's fair. What do your numbers tell you? Who do you like the best out of this group? If we're both on agreement, who's going to be the lowest owned and it's not going to impact your real decision? Who do you like at the top of this list? Who really calls out to you when you look at recent form and the numbers?
I just don't know how you can go against the Shambo. I think this course is going to be interesting. I mean, I'm excited for him to play this course because all the stuff we talk about, like where it's on punitive off the green or whatever. And I kept thinking about this every time I saw people play it when I was watching in the mornings. I watched all the rounds in the mornings every day except for Sunday. And almost no one, I think it's the whole seven, no one took that on in two. Like, I didn't see anyone do it. And it's only 570 yards. And there's, you know, there's like this like ravine or whatever that runs in, and then you have about 30 yards in between of like fairway, quote unquote, before you get to the green. And so people just thought that was, you know, too small of a landing spot. So they all like just played up to it and then shot like a 96 yard shot in. I think DeChambeau is just going to go for it. And I want to see that. I think it's going to be interesting because he has the ability to do it and the confidence to do it, you know. So I think, you know, is that going to provide him an advantage, or is it going to get him in too much trouble? I think we'll see. But I mean, his form is just too good. I don't understand. You know, I don't know how you could think otherwise at this point.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I think his advantage and his aggressiveness, and I think probably to some extent, and I know he doesn't have quite the length, Rory McIlroy, it probably gives him some sort of advantage, right? He's willing to take those sorts of risks a lot. I saw a lot more three wood than I expected this weekend, and that was something that surprised me quite a bit. So I do think that lends itself to Bryson. My only qualm with Bryson going into this week is if you look at, you know, basically all the way down to all the way down to Finau, kind of, he's not bad, but he is the worst player as far as strokes gained approach of the guys that I'm looking at right now. And that goes all the way down to people priced 8,300. And I think after watching last week, I kept my model the same, like which stats I pick, but I just heavily weighted strokes gained approach because I felt like that was where you needed to be the crispest. So if Bryson plays well there, I think, yeah, he's going to have a huge advantage on the field and could do that. I think the guy that is, for me, I mean, it's hard to argue against Justin Thomas. He was basically, the only weakness in his game last week was that he finished 29th in strokes gained putting in the field. Outside of that, he was on fire. Yeah, he made a couple mistakes on Sunday. But for 54 holes, he was bogey-free and had a lead, right? So it's hard to argue against Justin Thomas. I also like Rory McIlroy quite a bit. I think at some point he's going to get his game together, and in a place where I think, you know, ball striking is king, and you can putt, not be a great putter, or even putt poorly, like Victor Hovland showed, and put yourself in contention, lends itself well to Rory.
The one thing that I found the most interesting when I was going back and I was trying to reformulate the things that I thought were important was that it may be different this week because the rough is supposed to be, you know, crazier, but the people who did well didn't necessarily have around the green game like I would expect.
Right.
I thought that was pretty interesting because I just suspected, or the way it's been in the past is that the rough is just so high, and the way that the greens are undulated, it's tougher. So, I mean, like, I saw on the morning, Sunday morning, was it Sunday morning? Yeah, I think it was. It was Sungjae. He hits this on that short part, on 14, the short 4-4. He hits it so far right or whatever. He's like 40 yards right of the hole. And then he has this place that, like, he has like no place to land it on the mm-hmm. from it, and also he's in a bunch of rough, so he ends up hitting it from one rough to another rough, and I feel like that's going to happen more this weekend. And so I feel like I'm not really sure. I've been trying to figure out exactly how much I want to weigh approach or around the green, because I do think it'll be important, but the stats last weekend are making me question it a little bit, because there's a lot of guys who finished pretty low in it who did well.
I think
maybe that's like a variant, that's like a a thing where it doesn't really matter so much if you're just hitting the green all the time. You mess up on some ones where you don't hit the green.
I think you're right to maybe wait it a little more this week, because in the rough, in conjunction with firmer greens, means that ball's not going to hold as much, and you're going to have more guys having to hit those shots. Where last week, like, yeah, you were in the rough, and you can't control the spin, you can't put any spin on the ball, the rough, find a lot of flyers and that sort of thing. But we also had 2 days where there were rain delays and had a little bit of rain going into the week. And so the greens were just a lot softer and more receptive to holding those kinds of shots on. So I do think if strokes gained approach is something you went away, I think, or if strokes gained around the green is something you went away, then now's a pretty good time to do it.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to the next group of guys. I think, let's stick with the 9,000 area, because I feel, I don't know, there's so many guys this week, and I feel like we'll just, if we do too many, we'll skip
them. We'll miss, yeah.
Yeah. So we have Cantlay, 98, Webb, 96, Hovland, 95, Montano, Baum, Schauffele, Koepka, and Tiger rounding out the 9,000 range. You know, Brooks played awful last weekend. Rahm has been just wildly inconsistent from round to round, but it seems like he always misses the cut by like one.
Yeah,
never that far off.
Yeah,
but he's just been I am just shocked at how just all over the place his irons are, and he's missing both ways. I don't know what to make of it.
At least he's been fun on Twitter about it.
Yeah, that was a good post, and whoever made him the flight attendant or flight
that was very, very good.
Was also great. And Matsuyama had a good weekend, except for Sunday where he didn't play well. But my two favorite guys in this entire field are in this range, and that's Hovland and Simpson. I mean, I don't know a world in which either of those guys are like not in the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. I think there are two guys that are severely underpriced, and I think, or at least compared to probably specifically their betting odds. So like Patrick Cantlay was, what, 10-5 last week on DraftKings, and he was 12-1 to win, and now he's 9-8, and he's still 12-1 to win. So something's not adding up for me there. I feel like he's a little bit underpriced on DK right now. And I just think 9-6, while I enjoy getting Webb Simpson at that price, is utterly disrespectful to him and the form he's been in this year. I guess Justin Thomas has been better on tour so far this year, and Brendan Todd during his like 3-tournament run where he went first, third. But like outside of that, nobody's come close to playing at the level that Webb Simpson has consistently shown up at this year. And so I definitely agree with you there. I think he's the guy I target the most out of this area. Victor Hovland's weird. He finished third last week. Price didn't change at all. He's 9,500 last week, 9,500 this week. So I do like that. I'm a little worried about ownership there. But last 3 tournaments he's played in, he has led the field in strokes gained tee to green, which has not been done since they started recording the stat in 2004. So he's been impressive to say the least, his ball striking. I think your point on Rahm is correct. I think I'm going to play him this week because I can't watch that -8 on Sunday. I know he's been struggling, but it's tough for me to talk myself out of Rahm after that. So maybe a little bit of Rahm. And then I find Brooks Koepka incredibly interesting this week because you said he played awful, but he played 2 awful front nines, basically. And then he played incredible on both back nines. So it was a matter of his iron game being in the right place. And I think at this price, and where I think his ownership is going to fall, which is going to be pretty low because he's around a Rahm at 9,300, who's been playing better as of late. I think people are going to be excited to play Tiger Woods, all these sorts of things. You know, Hovland and Simpson are the guys in this range. I think he's going to be pretty low owned, and it's a chance to separate yourself if you happen to get that one right.
I do think he will be the lowest owned guy in his top 20 or so. Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing with Koepka, is that if you got someone safer, quote-unquote, like a Webb or Rory or something like that, you want to pair Brooks with them, don't go pairing Brooks with, like, DeChambeau or Brooks with DJ or something like that. That would be, like, wild, you know. That's just, like, too variant.
You don't think Bryson is, like, a lock for a top 15 finish?
Not on this course, no.
Interesting. Okay.
He could be. I mean, he's still playing the best right now, in my opinion. But I don't think he's a lock. I mean, I don't know. There's no track record for what he's doing. That's like the thing with until we see like a full year of how aggressive he's going to be consistently willing to be on these sorts of things, like, yeah, he can be crazy aggressive on the courses he's been playing where it's not super awful in the rough, but sure. Is he going to play it this weekend? And so I just don't know what to expect, really. But I think, like you were saying, his stroke gain, you know, approach isn't all that great from, you know, in any particular area. And so
He's still 37th on the PGA Tour in that. I was just comparing him to the other guys at the top for my rankings, right? He's still good.
Right. He's not like Webb Simpson, who's like fifth or...
Right.
Morikawa, et cetera. So if he doesn't... But what I'm saying is the 37th in this field is not top 15.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
And so if he's not driving the ball really far, is he going to be able to make up for it in other areas? And I'm just not sure about that. So I just don't know what to expect from him.
Yeah. I was just a little shocked that you were calling Bryson risky, because you've been all in on the Bryson train for the past couple of weeks. So
I'm playing him this weekend. I'm on the Bryson train.
Okay. We're just not playing him with Brooks.
I wouldn't play him with Brooks, no.
Okay. Fair enough. What are your thoughts on Tiger at 9,000? We talked about this a little bit off the show. I texted you about it.
I don't know how to make a Tiger. I mean, he's played really well. Obviously, he's 4-for-4 in cuts this year, which is not much. But, I mean, he's played really well in every tournament so far. I think he's in a good place health-wise. I'm not so worried this weekend about, you know, people aren't traveling. So, like, people like Morikawa and Justin Thomas, where they're typically having to, like, go from one tournament to another. Like, they're not having
right.
this weekend. So there's no built-in advantage, in my opinion, that Tiger's coming in fresh. I mean,
right.
been playing, but it's not like Tiger Woods just been sitting at home. So
right, yeah, he's been hanging out with Peyton.
And I think, you know, maybe Tiger's at a point in his life where he's done this enough and he can just get in that mentality of, oh, like, it's winning time. Or, you know, I mean, that was his biggest advantage for so long. And I just think I have to give some leeway to some of these guys who have had to do that already in the past 5 weeks. And I think that there's something to that.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. But I also think, like, you know, Tiger takes 2 months off and then just comes and wins the Zozo Championship and kind of blows everybody out of the water. And then then he takes a month and a half off and he comes and finishes fourth at the Hero World Challenge. And then he takes another month and a half off and finishes top 10 at the Farmers Insurance Open, right? So he's only got one bad finish of 68th, but he still made the cut there. I think people are going to be, you know, excited to play Tiger Woods. And
yeah, I think he's going to be pretty high on, especially in this price range.
Yeah.
He may be the highest owned person.
He'll probably be close. He'll be up there. This is what I sent you. My only concern is that we had the same discussion before the Zozo Championship, and I said, yeah, but I haven't seen Tiger play in 2 months. And I know he's $9,000 and it's tempting. And I didn't. I talked myself out of it. And I have been burned, and I don't know if I want to be burned again. So I'll probably play him in a couple lineups just in case, because I don't want that feeling. Maybe I should bet on him instead of playing him in lineups. Maybe that's the correct move.
I don't hate it. I mean,
that way he can't impact a roster of people if I am, you know, right in my trepidation to not play Tiger Woods this week.
Yeah. And the other thing about Tiger is that I don't... At this point in his career, like, I worry about him, like, if he's not playing well, like, really grinding it out to, like, make a finish. Like, he already has, like, $500 million. Like, what's it matter for him to, like, make or miss a cut at this point?
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good point, yeah.
He could just go home and hang out with his kids and be a happy dad. So
I read somebody talking about him, and they said, you know, can you, like, imagine Tiger enjoying getting his win to pass Sam Snead and then getting to shake Jack's hand at the end of it? Like, that just seems like a very fitting way for him to become the all-time wins leader. So I don't know. I feel like he's probably motivated. I mean, he's definitely motivated to get a win. He wants to hold that single-handedly.
Yep.
It's just, we'll especially, see if it's this week or not. And he plays well here, so.
Especially as his chances to win the majors dwindle, you know, he having this and his feather in his cap is going to be pretty big. Quite the do it in with this field. I think the last person we need to talk about, though, is the man, the myth, the legend, Patrick Cantlay, who I was for certain was going to be the highest owned guy. I'm pretty sure he was pretty close, but I'm not sure he made it. And he looked like he was going to kill everyone's roster, and then he the Patrick Reed and shot like 9 under on the final day with no pressure.
Yeah, he went 7 under. He was 8 under and then hit one into the water off the tee box because I texted you. I was like, hey man, he's 8 under through 17. So if hopefully people aren't paying attention to Cantlay, we can play him this week. And some like DraftKings apparently wasn't dropped his price, but the betting market kept the same on him. They saw something that round. He was super airing off the tee for the first 3 rounds. He couldn't hit a fairway, and wasn't giving himself good putts, and that worried me. But he clearly locked something in the final round and got back to some semblance of the Patrick Cantlay we expect. He's cheaper. I don't know if he's going to be higher owned this week than he was last week. But I liked what I saw from him. He shot 7 under in the final round and really grinded out the first 3 rounds, I thought. So it was a pretty, like, for not, you know, being at the top of the leaderboard like maybe we expected him to be, or I expected him to be, I thought it was a pretty solid performance all around that from Patrick Cantlay last week.
Yeah, he shot 2.7. I mean, nothing to complain about there, even if you had him. I just, you know, I always worry about, I feel like Patrick Reed does this all the time, that's why I call it that, is whenever there's just no pressure and you just go out and you're just playing around at golf. Some guys, you know, you take it one of two ways, whether they're just the best players in the world and therefore they can just turn it on at any point in time, or if he actually found something that was working for him. You know, I'm not sure which way you want to take it. I don't particularly want to play Cantlay this weekend, even though he has this like pretty wild course history, and maybe, I mean, I guess it's not going to get any worse than when he was shooting the first 2 rounds. It was so
bad
to watch.
It was rough to watch, especially as somebody who had him in like 37% of my rosters or whatever. It was disheartening to watch for a little while, but you know, it was what it was. He turned it around. He's now got 3 top 10s in his last 4 appearances here. So yeah, I mean, I think he's a threat to play really, really well this weekend. And if you're looking for somebody, you know, top of your lineup that's probably going to get you a top 10, top 20 finish, I think Cantlay is a good pivot to make. The only guy I don't like in this range, I probably won't play any Xander this week. I just definitely don't like. And I don't know if I'll play Matsuyama in any lineups, but I think I'll be betting him some this week.
I like Matsuyama this weekend. I thought he was, scroll down, I'm pretty sure he was on my... So he was terrible in putting this past weekend, and still
did
pretty well. And he's not a terrible putter anymore, specifically with the lag putts. I think he, at one point, was like the best lag putter last year he was the best in lag putting. So I expect more out of Matsuyama from that, and I think he's found something with his irons last couple of weekends. So I kind of like where Matsuyama's at. I think I'll have him in a fair share of my lineups. The one problem I always struggle with him is that I feel like he just never has a chance to win, and so that always kind of bugs me. But
I think a top 10 Matsuyama bet will be where I like put my like interest in him this week.
So
that's what I feel about him.
But do you think so? You think Rom? So, I don't know. Maybe I'll go play Rom. I'm just worried that Rom and Tiger are going to be like so crazy high owned. They're like the only two guys that I'm like worried about with ownership. Everyone else, I think it's going to be pretty dispersed or low.
Yeah, I'm just Rahm is interesting. I think Tiger is going to be pretty highly owned. I don't know what I think about Rahm because yeah, he's cheap, but he also he hasn't finished inside the top 30 in the last 3 tournaments or something like that.
Right.
And he's always been flirting with the cut line, so maybe it scares people away a little bit, but he's just such a talented golfer, and you're getting him at such a cheap price this week that I go back and forth on what I think his ownership is going
to
be.
All right, well, I may pivot to him from Matsuyama, but I will keep you TBD on that. All right, and going into the 8,000 range, similar group of guys, in terms of number of guys. We got Rose, Fowler, Berger, Woodland, Anser, Reed, Finau, M, Fitzpatrick, Day, and Kuchar. I think this is honestly the most interesting group out of everyone that we talked about so far, because you're getting a couple of guys who haven't played in a couple of weeks. You're getting guys that have won, Daniel Berger, and it's been awesome. And then you have guys that have talent that have struggled, Sung JM. And then you get a course horse in Matt Kuchar. So I only have one guy. I have two guys that I'm definitely not playing any of, three guys actually, that I'm not playing any of this weekend, but the rest, you know, I think I might have a little bit of them all, but I don't know. First, I'm staying away from Rose.
Yeah, same.
Terrible. I know he's a course horse, but he doesn't have any of the iron play. And his putting has just been so bad this year that I just don't think you can play him. I think he's in the 170s in strokes gained putting. And I think pretty much that's, if he putts well, he'll be okay. But if he doesn't putt well, he's going to miss the cut. And that he's just, I think he's just going to miss the cut again. I don't like Patrick Reed this weekend for similar reasons. His putter just determines everything about how he plays. And I think when a player is like that, I don't mind it if they're like one of your cheap guys, like Rio or something. Sure. Like, you know, if his putter is good, it's great or whatever. And if it's bad, it's just terrible. But it really affects all of the game for Patrick Reed. And I hate that. And so that's what makes, I think that's why people don't like playing him. I think they struggle to figure out exactly what it is outside of the fact that the stats never love him. But I don't know. Someone said this the other day. If he's top five in strokes gained putting, he finishes in the top 10. If he doesn't finish in the top five of strokes gained putting, he either misses the cut or he's like in the bottom 10 of people who make the cut.
I feel like the reason putting affects so much of Patrick Reed's game is because he's constantly putting himself in positions specifically off the tee where he's giving himself tough approach shots. So if he's not sticking them and giving himself good looks at it with the putter, then he's just going to struggle. And so the fact, like, because he's not a bad putter, it's just the type of looks he tends to give himself. And right. And that's where you get into problems, and especially with he showed it round one. He was pretty solid tee to green, and then the rest of the tournament, he was just not that great tee to green. He had some moments. And that's when he started to struggle and fall off the leaderboard. I agree with you on both the guys that you're avoiding this week. I go back and forth on him. He's just playing so poorly, but he's so cheap. And the other guy that I think I might avoid this week, and not because I don't think he's going to play well, but I think that he's going to be the most highly owned guy in the field, is Gary Woodland. And so,
yep, I'm with you.
Despite the fact that I think he may play well, I might try to pivot to guys around him who I think may end up having a better performance, which is going to be tough because Gary Woodland, you know, has struggled at times, but is playing some pretty solid golf right now. It was a terror in rounds 3 and 4 this last week. So I like Berger. I like Berger's price a lot. He's coming off a string of top 10 finishes, but he took a few weeks off. So does that impact him at all as he get back in rhythm? But also, he came back and won the first tournament out of, you know, COVID quarantine, so maybe it doesn't affect him the way it affects other guys. I think you like Answer a little bit this week.
Yeah, Answer, my favorite guys in this range, first and foremost, is Tony Finau. He checks a lot of the boxes in terms of his strokes gained approach on these longer par fours. You were talking about it in your model that the way that and looking back on it, people who did really well in the long par fours graded really well and gained so much strokes on the rest of the field that their scores were a lot higher. And so, yeah. Finau, you have to, I think whenever I'm going to look at this for this particular tournament moving forward, that's something where I'm going to say, who can reach that level of, who can be that person that can play really well in those par fours because they're going to be gaining like almost a full stroke on the field that way. And Finau, definitely one of the guys there. Answer, I like. I'm kind of worried about his length off the tee, but he's just such a good iron player. And the last time I saw him play, I mean, he was just peppering the greens. And he's a top 15 in the strokes gained approach. What more do you want from someone? And I think he's going to go under owned because of guys like Fowler playing well, Berger being recently won, Woodland playing really well last weekend. I think he's going to be really lost in the shuffle on this, and so I'm pretty excited to hammer and get some leverage on the field that way.
Yeah, I think Answer is the right pivot if you're looking to avoid who everybody else is going to be playing. I think Fowler's played well the last 2 weeks, and people really like Ricky Fowler. That's going to be a sexy pick. I think Gary Woodland, again, my prediction is he's going to be the highest owned guy in the field. I think Sung J.M. is an interesting pivot for people because he's so cheap, so I think people will be willing to take the risk on him. And then Tony Finau, like you said, he checks a lot of the boxes. We'll say it, you said it before, I've said it before, this is the type of tournament we'd like to see him go out, shoot a really solid score, finish top 10, top 15, because he has the tools to do it. He's posting videos of himself with 203 mile an hour ball speed off the tee with a little bit longer backswing. Like, this is fun. So I would love to see Tony Finau play well. I really like him. And so, yeah, I think Answer provides value, and just that I don't think a lot of people are going to play him because I think there's a lot of fun stuff around him. So I think he's a great pivot.
another reason I really like Anther. So he's 11th overall in strength gained approach, but he's 32nd in 200 to 225. He's 19th from 100 to 125. And he's 5th from 150 to 175. So to me, those are the three most important ranges for this weekend. And I think because of how he plays, I think a lot of these power guys, they just try to get it as close to the green as possible. And they're like, oh, well, I can control this wedge in. He really plays to get to a shot that he likes. And so I have a lot of confidence in him getting to that 150 to 175 range where he's just a monster.
With thinking his way through the course.
Right, where he's a monster with these 8-irons. So I that's why I like Anser a lot this weekend. The other person I think I'm going to stay away from a lot, I'm definitely staying away, is Matthew Fitzpatrick. He is really low in all the strokes gained approaches from all the key distances this weekend. I know that he's played pretty well, but I just don't think he has any upside. And I don't really think he's particularly safe either. So I think I'm going to stay away.
Yeah, I think Matthew Fitzpatrick is a good call to stay away from as well. I'm not going to be playing him as many lineups. Probably any lineups. I think I only played him in one last week. What are your thoughts on Jason Day? Struggled a lot this year. Came out, played great. I think a lot of the change for him was he putted the ball like way better than he has been, which is weird because for 2-3 years in a row, he's one of the few guys that's been able to lead the tour back-to-back years in strokes gained putting when he did that a few years ago. And then that's kind of left him, and then was really great with the putter in his hands last week. His price has gone up a little bit, which makes me think in this range he might be a little lower owned. So if he could show the same sort of performance, then you know we might get another value play out of Jason Day this week.
He was like 5% owned. The two guys that I'm struggling with, I want to play them because I like both of them, is M and Day. I'll hit on Day first. So it's interesting that you talked about how good he was on putting. He was, of the guys who made the cut, he had the second lowest strokes gained putting. And then he finished 27th.
Yeah, he turned it on late in the round. He made some really tough putts in rounds 3 and 4.
And so I think he started gaining some confidence with that club, but he was also giving himself opportunities. He basically, I mean, the first day, I mean, he could have been 4 or 5 under, but he hit the twice on the par five, on like the second par five, and still only made a bogey because he made a good pitch and a good putt. And he just didn't make a lot of birdies on par five where normally he's very capable of.
Right.
And one thing that I thought was kind of weird for him is that he was, I think, like 53rd in distance, and for someone who can really bomb the ball, I thought maybe he was like too conservative with his play, and he can be that way at times. So I wonder if he changes it up this weekend, or if he's going to continue to do things. But I mean, I think he's a very solid play at 8,000. He gives you some modicum of winning upside here, and he's someone that I'll definitely play. M, what do we make of him? I mean, he just hasn't played well in 5 weeks.
And for somebody, I think he led the tour in top 10s last year in his rookie year. And I mean, part of that's just because he plays so many tournaments, he gives himself more opportunities. But for a guy that I just generally view as having no weaknesses in his game, when he's playing well, I haven't seen anything that's looked like a strength to him. His putter's been off. His approach play, any iron shot really, he hasn't looked comfortable on it. I mean, he's been fine off the tee. It's probably been his most solid area recently, but I don't know what to make of him. I feel like an idiot because, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago, I said play all the M you can play because you're never going to get him at a price better than this, and he was 8,600, something like that, and now we're getting him at 8,200. So I feel like I should double down on this. I talked about Webb being priced below the way he's played in his talent level. I feel like that's what M is right now. He just hasn't played as well, but he's priced so far below his talent level.
So I think with M, all right, so here's something that's very interesting to me. So last weekend, I think one of the reasons he did poorly is he was awful off the tee. And he's 22nd in strokes gained off the tee.
Right.
I think that's something he can correct. What really concerns me, though, is that he was awesome at the beginning of the year. And I don't know what his strokes gained approach was at that particular point in time. But he was all the way down to 62nd. And to me,
his iron play has been the most shakiest thing.
And so after probably being top 20 for that particular time, to be 62nd now means he must be playing at like a 1/30th, approach recently. And so I don't know. So I've talked about playing him. So I think that I don't know. I think I'm going to stay away from him. I think it's the right play. I talked myself into it this morning. I'm talking myself out of it right now.
Yeah.
A pivot.
I usually have strong feelings one way or another that I think it's right to play a player on a given week, or I think it's wrong to play a player on a given week. But this time, I genuinely, like, if somebody gives me a hard case for staying away from him, I'm going to just take that for what it is, and I'm going to go, yeah, I understand. And if somebody would give me a really strong case for playing him in all their lineups because he's so cheap and he's so talented, I'd go, yeah, like, that makes sense, too. And it's funny that, yeah, I'm not going to try and talk you into anything one way or another, but, I don't know what to make of him, and it's unfortunate. I think I'm going to play him this week. I feel like at some point he's too talented and has to turn it around. I feel like he plays better when a lot of people are around, a lot of bigger names are around. But I just don't know. Maybe he's like Matsuyama for me. Maybe he's a guy that I bet and I just don't play in lineups, really.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know. He's tough to be a crap. So moving on, and then Kuchar, I think we've talked about him. I think I'm mostly in agreement with where you are, is that he just had a career year last year. His expectations are too high. I don't really think he gives you any win equity in a field this stacked. And so therefore, I'm not going to play him. I guess if you need a safer guy, he may be safe to make the cut. But I'm not.
I think he's probably going to make a cut this week, finish like top 40.
Yeah. So moving on to the 7K range, a lot of very interesting names here. I have one particularly favorite play, and that's Joaquin Niemann, who's at the top of this range at 7,900.
Yeah, he's my favorite play.
My second favorite play is Leishman, despite the fact that he missed the cut last week and he played pretty awful. I have faith in his iron play. He's always been consistent on that front, and the fact that he was just so bad last weekend, I'm going to look past.
This is a fun, outside of probably Brooks, this is our one big disagreement, that I will not be playing Mark Leishman this week. He's got two missed cuts and a 58th place finish in his last three tournaments. I just don't think he's in form right now. I think he's a really good golfer. You're right, he's a great iron player when he is, but I just don't see it coming from him right now. But we agree on our favorite play out of this price range. I think it's Joaquin Niemann. He played really solid last week. His betting market in the books is higher than DraftKings currently. He didn't have a great Saturday, but outside of that, you know, he was solid. And I think he has the high upside talent to finish highly, and I think he's a really great iron player. My other guy I really, really like in this space is Doc Redman.
Really? That's a game I didn't even have on my radar. But first, can I try to talk to Leishman real quick?
You can try to talk me into Leishman. It's probably not going to work.
So I understand the form. What do you think he is strokes gained this year?
I know he's like 3 or 4.
He's fourth.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
do you want to know why I know that? Because he was first going into last week, and that was terrible. So I just guessed.
So he's 26 for 200 to 225, 11th to 100 to 125, 25th 50 to 125, and 19th 150 to 175. And he's also great on a purchase from the rough.
I understand all these things.
I mean, I can't ignore it. And this is kind of going with my theory where I'm not really. So the one thing that he's bad at is around the green.
Yeah.
He's not a great putter either. He's terrible around the green. He's 181st. So I'm trying to figure out my theorization here. But I just can't ignore his strike. Can't ignore the iron play.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Like, I understand how solid of an iron player he is, but I also understand how bad he's looked the last 3 weeks. I don't know. I guess I also just kind of feel like a hurt lover right now because I played a lot of him last week and he just didn't show up at all for me. Which is
that's unfortunate because he was like, I think he's got high upside. Even before this, he was this year he's third, tied for 43rd, 69th, 28th, first, 43rd, 42nd, second.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that he has the talent to go out and win a golf tournament. Like, that's not my argument. I feel like there are guys here that are safe. And
he's just
finished solid.
Yeah, I just think he gives you legit winner upside from this range, where outside of Niemann and another guy like Hadwin, I'm not sure that how much win equity you're going to get from this range. And so that's why I like him.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So let's get on Doc Redman.
Yeah, I mean, Doc Redman, since we've come back, hasn't missed a cut. His last, what, 8, 9, 10? In his last 12 rounds, 11 of them have been under par, coming off 21, tie for 21, tie for 11th, tie for 21. He is a ball-striking machine. He's 15th in strokes gained approach right now. He's 29th off the tee, top 30 in long par 4 efficiency, which we talked about is a pretty good indicator of how somebody's going to play here. He's just not a great putter, and that doesn't really concern me as much going into this week, especially at this range. I've just been playing a lot of Doc Redman this year, and he's kind of shown up for me, so I have a sort of a comfort level playing him. I haven't played him at these sort of prices, but after his last three finishes, I think he's kind of earned this value that he's being given by DraftKings right now.
Yeah, I mean, so he's kind of like your poor man's Ishan, where he's 15th in short game approach, but he's 201st on the green, which is basically the best, 120th at the putting. So, but you know what's weird is, yeah, I don't know. So, but he's only $200 cheaper than Leishman, but he's in form. That's like the big change.
That's my differentiator, yeah. And also, he didn't hurt my feelings last week.
So, but, well, okay, do you think he can win?
No, but I think he's going to finish top 20, top 25.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, I think he is pretty interesting. I guess for a 7,600, that's teetering on. I guess it varies by lineup, right? What you need. So that's like what it is with him. I mean,
I guess the difference is I'm looking for consistency with Doc Redman, not like high end win potential, right? So like, yes, Leishman's finish has a second and a first this year, but if you look at their like points per start that they've scored, Doc Redman scored higher in points per start than Mark Leishman is. So I think we're just looking at it from different angles right now. I think they both do what the course requires very solidly, but you want Leishman to be able to win, which I understand, but I'm just like, maybe I'm going to take my risk in like Brooks and Rahm and then play Doc Redman here as my sort of like, I think there's a solid floor with this guy at this price point.
Yeah. You know, before we actually got into this range, I kind of wanted to go, because I think this range is interesting in regards to how people played last weekend. So Keegan led the standard approach last weekend. CT Pham, who's $6,200 this weekend, was second.
Mm-hmm.
And he just also finished dead last in the field in putting. Russell Henley, sixth. Taylor Gooch was fifth.
All right.
And Brandon Steele was like 11th or 12th. And Sepp Straka, your boy, was like 15th.
Yeah.
And Corey Connors was 14th. And he could probably actually improve on that. So there's a lot of guys in this range that finished really well and were playing really well last weekend that either didn't really move up or, I mean, they just, they like this course, or they at least liked it last weekend. So I think there's
some
guys in this range that are going to be able to get you where you need to go in terms of, you know, winning.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting decision once you get down in like the 7,200, 7,300s. Is like, do you play the guys who played well last week, or do you like Scottie Scheffler's by far the most talented guy down here. He's at 7,200, and I know he hasn't played well, but at some point he's going to play well. And at this price, you want to get him when he does. So it's a really, I think it's interesting. I think there are a lot of cool names. Like Max Homa didn't play poorly last week. He missed the cut by one stroke. He's been pretty solid all year. He's 6,800 this week. Maverick McNealy didn't play well last week, but he's played well leading up to it. 6,800. So that's just like what happens when you gather field quality like this, right? Like you're gonna get guys down here that you go, oh man, they've popped off in tournaments. But yeah, of course they have. Like everybody's popped off in tournaments when you have a field this solid.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, yeah. So two other guys that I mentioned that I'm going to be pretty heavy on. You mentioned Steele. I do like him. I'm going to play a little bit. Hadwin, who to me, I mean, it's $7,400. He made the cut last weekend, and he didn't even play well. He didn't finish in the top 30 in strokes gained approach for the tournament, and that's like his calling card. And he made the cut, so I feel pretty excited that he's going to have some progression to the mean on his strokes gained approach going into the weekend. And I think he's a great play. And then Phil, who I never play,
Phil's fun this week.
He was second to last in putting this weekend, and he still made the cut. And he wasn't,
Phil is,
also was not in the top 30 in strokes gained approach. I think he's going to be really good.
Yeah, I did an interesting thing that I think I'll start doing more often when I looked at stats, because I was, specifically looking at the same stats for the same course, and I wanted to see, what people made big leaps by playing this course, and so I marked them certain colors based on whether they got better or worse in important stats to me this week. And Phil Mickelson was dark green in 4 out of the 5 stats I'm looking at this week, which means he improved by 20 places or more, which means, I guess he probably doesn't have to improve as much as somebody who's getting from 60th to 40th to get from 110th to 90th or whatever, right?
But it still shows good.
But it shows how well he played ball striking wise last week, because those were all the stats I was looking at, which is not what Phil Mickelson's calling card has been later in his career. So yeah, based on that and how poor he was putting, I'd like him this week quite a bit at his price.
Yep. And then the last guy I want to mention from this group is Shane Lowry, who I was high on last weekend. I'm still high on because he still has a lot of the he played pretty well stroke gained approach. I think he was like 25th or 22nd or something like that. But he was terrible with the putter. And I know he's not great around the greens, which is kind of weird for an Irish guy, because I feel like they normally...
That's what you have to be, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that was kind of weird. So I'm going to go back to the well with him. I think he also, I don't know if he provides win equity, but I feel like he can definitely, he won the Open. So I think he does have some
win equity. He's in a feature group.
Yeah. So I like Shane Lowry this weekend, even though he missed a cut by, I think, only like 1 or 2 strokes. So he wasn't like, I think he has a lot of room for improvement.
All right, so let's do a new segment I kind of came up with this week. I think it'll be fun. We'll do an alternating shot. So we're going to build some lineups here where we'll do one where you pick first, and then I pick after you, and we'll alternate through a lineup and see what we come up with. And we'll do one where I pick first. So I'll log it in over here and keep track of the money. So who are you going with your first pick in your lineup?
All right, well, to make us both happy, I'll go with Rory.
Okay, well.
I'm going to build them as we go, so.
Okay, that sounds good. I'm building as well. Second pick, I'm going to go with somebody we both like this week. I'm going to go with Joaquin Niemann as our second pick.
All right, so we have some wiggle room now. So we're at 78.50 average remaining players. So we can still go high, or we can go low. Now, all right, so Rory's on a top guy. 10.7 is still pretty expensive. Are we wanting to kind of like level it out at the bottom? Maybe don't go lower than like 7,000, 7,100, or do you mind dipping down and really finding someone? Or would you rather just pick someone that we really like at the top, and then if we had to pick a cheap guy, we throw him in there?
I think we build the roster. I think the third pick is yours, buddy. I think you get to decide which direction we go with this.
All right, well, we're going with it then. We're going Webb.
I love it. All right, so we got
7,200 left. We have 7,200. Yeah, 7,266.
Well, then I'm gonna go with somebody I mentioned just a little bit ago as a guy who played pretty well last week, barely missed the cut, and kind of give us some wiggle room here. I'm gonna go with Max Homa. So we got 7,500 for the last two guys. So we can get a little bit creative here if we want.
So Max Homa at 6,800. I like that play. I need to add him. So Homa, what is he's obviously fairly long off the tee. I'm unfamiliar with what exactly. Why do you like him for this particular range?
I think he provides... I mean, he's a winner on tour, right? Which is something you can't say about a lot of the guys around his price point. And I know it was a long time ago, and it was kind of just
It was like a year and a half ago. It wasn't like 2 years ago. It wasn't that long.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago. That's true. But I think his length off the tee gives him an advantage. He's really good scoring on par fives, which you need here. I was surprised to find that he's top 40 in par four efficiency from 450 to 500 yards, which puts him in the top 20 for the tournament.
Okay, I love that. He's terrible at, he's literally dead last in around the green.
Yeah, he's terrible there. He is terrible around the greens, but again, like I will keep coming back to Victor Hovland. But I understand he's a much better player, but if you, or Colin Morikawa in some situations, if you hit it close, it doesn't matter what you do around the greens, right? So if you're hitting fairways and you're hitting greens, you're going to give yourselves opportunities and you're going to make some of them eventually. All right, so who do you got for us?
I'm going to play with a couple names here because I'm kind of trying to figure out how much I want to give you.
Hey, I'm tough. I'll figure it out. I'm resourceful.
All right, well... Oh, well, I'll be resourceful. I'm going to go with my boy, second in strokes gained last weekend, CT Pan, at 6,200.
Ooh.
So now you have 8,800 for the last guy.
8,800? I think I'm going to play Berger. Berger will be our last lineup there.
I like that. So I think we legit have four guys who can win the tournament in this lineup.
Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind. A McIlroy win would obviously not surprise me. A Webb win, 3-1 year this early, would be pretty impressive, but not surprise me. Neiman has a talent to win a tournament, and I think Berger has a talent to win a tournament. And I think Max Homa could come out and finish top 15, top 20, and CT Pan can make you a cut, finish top 30, top 15. I mean, he won last year on tour, so yeah. We definitely have guys that have high upside here.
I like it. I think it's a good mix. It's a good mix of safety, because, I mean, Rory to me is like the most consistent player. I know we talked about like JT being the best all around, but Rory to me is the most consistent player on tournament. Like, even when he's like a top 20, like pretty much automatic. It's like really crazy.
He's really, really good at grinding out rounds.
Yes.
Where other guys would just be like, oh man, I haven't hit a good shot in my first 12 holes. I'm just going to kind of phone it in and enjoy the rest of my weekend. Rory's like, nah, I'm here to make a cut, make some money, and prove I'm the best player in the world. He plays with a chip, which I kind of like.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Let's see. All right. So let's do this time.
I'm going to start our roster off with John Rahm. I got a lot of faith in him this week.
All right, well then, I think this will be a fun theme for this group. I'll go with theme now. Short backs.
Okay.
Long.
Short backs. I don't know that there are too many more guys like that. let's go with Answer. I think that's a solid play here. And I think we're maybe pivoting a little bit from guys that we think will be, maybe get some guys that will be a little less owned but have some higher upside.
All right, well then I will go all in here. I'll go Victor Hovland. Yeah, 7,200. That's not terrible. We can get lower and get a higher guy, or you know, there's a lot of guys in this range I actually do that I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I was rounding out this roster, I know what I would do right now. So I'll pick the first guy that I would round out. I'm gonna pick Keegan Bradley. I know I don't play him often. I'm not a big fan, but he's shown me something over the past couple weeks. He's played pretty well, and I really liked his play last week.
He was first in stretch game approach. And he was almost dead last with first game putting. It was like Keegan Bradley around the ball, Keegan Bradley around.
It really
And I would go with... So, all right, so rounding back here. So we have four guys who can legit win. I think Keegan has always had really high upside.
Yeah.
Man, I think this type of roster construction is actually going to be pretty popular. I don't think the players themselves all put together here are popular, but I think I could see a lot of guys going 2 9s, 2 8s, and 2 7s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be a pretty popular. I think I kind of want to go balls to the wall here and really try to really have another guy that can really get us a win. We talked about him. I'm personally not going to play him, but Scotty Scheffler.
I would have picked Scheffler and Ben Bradley as my two to round out the lineup. So
that's fine. I think this is a really strong. We're pivoting and providing upside. The two critical pieces.
The two pieces to daily fantasy sports, I guess.
So yeah, I like that because in both lineups, you have four dudes that can legit win, and if you don't have that in every lineup, then you're never, you know, in terms of like the MMEs, like you're just never gonna win.
Yeah, you gotta peek. All right, real quickly here before we go through our few of our specific plays that we do every week. Do you have anything betting wise that you like win top 10, top 20 that's standing out to you right now?
Yeah. So obviously, I think I don't want to hammer this home, but I'm gonna hammer it home. Webb is my favorite play. I love Webb. Across the board, love. In terms of like, I like a couple of these guys for like longer shots. Yeah, +66 seems really low.
It's really low.
Especially for him. I mean, just people tend to like him and it's going to gravitate towards him. So I was kind of interested that he was so low. And I think Berger at 40 to 1. That is enticing.
That's a good number.
I like him a little more. Like I don't like Answer so much on the winning front. I like him to more solid finish. But Berger, I mean, 40 to 1. That has me excited.
Yeah, there are a few numbers that like I already talked about. I'm not going to bet Cantley. I'm not going to bet any of the top guys. I don't think any of them provide real value in their numbers. Bryson 10 to 1, Thomas 10 to 1, Cantley 12, Rory 12. Although Rory fourth on any betting board to win outright is like super interesting to me. DJ 1601 doesn't really interest me that much. Now, the first number I see that interests me is Brooks at 20-1 because his DK price is so much lower. And then the Cantley number is weird to me as well, but I talked about that. Other numbers I like, I'm not going to really play a ton of them because I think he's going to be the most highly owned in DK, but I like Gary Woodland at 40-1. He really showed me something at the end of last week. He's putting very well this year. I putted great last week, and his ball striking is always phenomenal. I feel the same way about Finau you do, and then Joaquin Niemann at 66-1 as well is a pretty interesting number to me. So those are the guys I like for winners. Long odds, I feel like Cam Champ is just more talented than a 125-1 guy.
That's how I feel about Phil. Well,
yeah.
125-1.
Yeah.
That's worth $10.
Yeah, that's worth that's worth $5. The odds aren't out yet on Bovada for top 10, but as usual, I will be locking in a Webb Simpson top 10 bet for quite a sizable amount of money because I feel like that's like there's death taxes and Webb Simpson finishes top 10 this season. There are three guys I like also to finish top 10 from the top: Cantlay, Hideki, and John Rahm's last round. I'm pretty in on Rahm. I showed that when I picked him first in our back and forth on DraftKings. That round just was beautiful and had me look at my chops, so I like him coming into this week.
All right, I'm gonna pivot to some Rahm there. I like it. I'm gonna add that. And you talked to me in the too, because whenever you can get a guy that's top 40 in strokes gained approach and they're 6,800, and you know they're like the 100th price person of the round. I mean that's pretty good.
Yeah, I have Holman in my top 20. I have a lot of names in my top 20 that I'll play depending on the numbers when I get them from Bovada. I like Niemann a lot. Woodland, Answer, they'll probably have numbers that are enticing, probably anywhere between 2-3-1. I'll make a play for some big guy, which I know scares you, but I hit Cantley last week, and it might be him again. I like the way he looked at the end of the round. I think the numbers on Corey Connors and Doc Redman are going to be really interesting, along with Cam Champ. I liked how Keegan, Phil, and Sabs played last week, and I think their numbers will be pretty good. And for whatever reason, I never thought I'd play Streelman in my entire life, but the last two tournaments he's played in, he's finished top 15 and has been great ball striking wise. So I think I'll probably look for a number for him because the betting market isn't, you know, catching up to him in the same way that DraftKings is, because, you know, he's just not actually that good, but he's on a heater right now.
Right. You know, it's interesting. So Sabs was only like 29th, I think, in strokes gained approach last weekend, and for given how well he played, and him not like getting just wildly hot with the putter, I think that's pretty interesting that he finished so hot.
He was one of the guys in par four efficiency where his performance last week far outranked what he had done so far throughout the season. So it's again, I think that metric is really going to shine. We're gonna check these stats again next week, and I'm gonna specifically do it for this and try to match up. Hey. Did this stat show me who played well and who didn't? And if it did, then I think there's something to learn from that.
And then the other person on Stroman, my last comment about Stroman is he is one of the guys that I have a big mark, him and Woodland, big mark and Xander. The guys who are due to regression because their putting far outperformed what they do. Now, you're not as convinced about that on Woodland because he's been good this year. I'm not convinced that Woodland's a great putter, so...
That's fair. Interesting Streelman fact, I did read that he changed his putting coach like very recently, and it's been since then that he's been putting better. So maybe he found something, maybe he didn't, I don't know, but that is an interesting note about him.
Good to know. Yeah, fair enough. All right, so the last bit is who's like your Mickelson? I mean, I think everyone knows who my Mickelson play is this week. It's definitely...
Definitely Webb. I think mine is going to be some combination of Brooks and Rahm this week. I think
I like it. That's risky.
A lot of those guys.
It's risky. I love it. Yeah. Kind of risk it to get the biscuit. And then who keeps drawing you in? I mean, I'm going to person again. For me, it's Leishman. I can't ignore.
Interesting.
The ball striking.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think you have good reasons to like Leishman. My people that are drawing me in this week, I haven't talked about him a lot in the podcast, which is weird because he's one of my, you know, two or three favorite golfers. Victor Hovland really draws me in. I think he might go a little bit under the radar. with no price change. And then I think Daniel Berger is going to go under the radar this week, and I think he's going to play really, really well. And so I have Berger in this place as well. For a little bit of counterplay, my fade this week, along with Justin Rose, who we both definitely don't like this week, is Leishman. I just can't bring myself to play him this week. And then Jordan Spieth has his standing spot here.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, because I think my fade, it's not even really because of form, I think it's just more really just pricing, is Dustin Johnson. I just think he's far too high for as inconsistent as he's been over the past year to somehow just put together these three tournaments that he's played really well in this year, and to make him a top three player in the world just seems wildly. It just I think that's inaccurate. So I think he's the one I'll be staying away from. Outside of that, it's Rose.
Yeah, I think we're both definitely in agreement on Rose this week. Just not a guy that we're looking forward to playing, and just he's earned it over his performance the past 2 weeks. Anything else before we sign off today?
No, I don't think so.
Alright, we've been a little long-winded anyway, so we should probably wrap this up. That's all we have for you this week. Thanks for listening. You can find the show on Twitter if you want to interact with us at InTheBagCast, Slaughter at Slaughter, and myself at JamesPaul4, and you can find us anywhere you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Google, doesn't matter. If you take some time to listen and find us on there, please subscribe, download, leave a comment. We'd really appreciate it. And we appreciate you taking time out of your day to listen to this podcast this week. So happy investing this weekend, and we hope you'll tune in again next weekend so we can make sure you have the right clubs and the bag. Thanks again. Stay safe.